would be the planning board and then the zoning board. So the planning board will look at applications in your community that do not require a variance. And we're going to talk about a lot of different things here. And a zoning board is what your quasi-judicial board is, and that is where someone wants to come in and put something in that doesn't fit your current zoning. Perfect example in the town of Clinton was when we had the cannabis company come in and want to go into an old TD Bank. The zone for that particular piece of property did not allow for retail or pharmacy. So in order for them to get to have an application to apply there, they would have to go before the zoning board, which requires a variance because now you're changing or you're asking for a change to the use, and you have to show why it is the right thing to do. So with that, it's convoluted at best.
It seems more complicated than it is from all the different kind of verbiage and jargon that's used to explain the way that it works. It's essentially a legal structure by which a town is planned and governed, right? And so it's a way that a town can plan for and manage its appropriate growth. And it can determine areas in which people should live, and areas in which people should do business, and areas in which agriculture should exist. And it's, if done in a sensible way and in a way that I think is planned for, it is done in conjunction with input from people who live in the community, with experts,
right,
who do this for a living, who went to school and practice this and have experience and know what they're doing. And it's done with insight and thought to the future, and which I think we in Clinton have done. Certainly, Janice, you have done over the last 8 years. And it's planned with a thought for the future of, well, sure, this is the position we're in now, and these are the positions we were in over the last, 10, 20, 30 years.
Right.
But where are we going, and where do we want to go? And so the concepts of zoning and land use are really intended to help you plan for the future and make an intelligent plan so that your community is prepared and organized in a way that is the best use of the community. And so from my background, so I'm trained as a property lawyer, and so my background is in property law, and that is the first thing you learn in property law is that's the underpinnings of property law from all the way back to England, and from where our common law comes from is that property law stems from wanting the property to go to its most natural best use.
Right.
And so that is where the laws always, in theory,
intended
start from.
Yes.
Where they wind up, obviously, we all know, gets convoluted and gets interrupted by interests and confusion and other things. But where it all began, in theory, was this idea that it's supposed to go towards its most natural best use. And so that's, from my perspective, if you can think of zoning and land use law and regulation as coming from that initially, and then obviously, as I said, and as we'll talk about, it becomes confusing and convoluted as you go along. But from the beginning, that's where you're starting, is this idea of, well, what is the best use of this property? And then how do I plan today, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years?
Right.
Because we're always, certainly in Clinton, and I think most communities are thinking, okay, I'm in office today, and I need to deal with the immediate consequences of what I'm doing. But I also need to think about, well, I'll be in office a year from now, so what's it going to be in a year from now? But maybe I won't be in office in 5 years, but I might be living here, and everybody else is living here, and it's my responsibility for planning, so I'll be planning for 5 years. And then, you've got to think
right
long term, because when you lay a pipe in the ground for water infrastructure, we've been talking about this week with a couple of residents, when you lay pipes in the ground for water infrastructure, you have to think about, well, sure, this is going to serve people today, but how many people does it need to serve in 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
Right.
Because it's not cheap to lay pipes for water infrastructure. So we all think about all of these things as we're planning.
Right. You know, and part of the, I think the biggest struggle for a lot of communities, you know, you have personal ties to, if you grew up in a community, what used to be, what you want to keep. So it's a balance of maintaining that, the charm of a community, while also trying to move forward and ensure that that charm remains, but businesses still thrive.
Absolutely.
That's probably one of the biggest struggles. And then you have all of these boards in I think in almost every town in New Jersey are volunteers.
Yes.
They do it because they have a love of community. They're being asked, they may have some expertise to be a part of it, and they're donating their time and taking the opportunities to read numerous reports to try and understand plans. I mean, when we have an applicant come in, we can sometimes get a big sheet of 20 pages of different plans. You know, one may be landscaping, one may be infrastructure, one may be the exterior, one is the interior. And taking the time to learn how to read them and understand them. I think what still gets me is elevations. For whatever reason, I still don't understand elevations. But, you know, it's using then the experts that we also hire, our planner and our engineers, to ensure that they're reviewing it. You know, and it's, to Riley's point, we're looking at it now and then 5 and 10, 15 years from now.
Right.
You know, and if you've watched the history of New Jersey and how it has developed. So out here in Hunterdon County, when I first came out here in the late 70s with my parents, it was almost all farmland. 78 actually stopped at Berkeley Heights because of the bog turtle. That was the reason why it couldn't expand. And then it stopped in Phillipsburg. So it's only, it was in the 80s and the 90s that those roads then became interstates.
Right.
And went beyond where they're at right now. So it's, you know, these are the kinds, and of course, once you expand roadways and you have major highways coming through, now you're bringing in residential. You had people moving from the urban areas looking for more property. So now you have what some term as sprawl, old farms that have been turned into housing developments. And, you know, you got 15 homes on 15 acres.
Right.
And it's all kind of spread out. And each town does it differently. So, you know, there's this balance of the environmental. And to your point about what's the best use of the land, it's how do you manage all that? And how do you see into the future?
Yeah, well, and I think you have to be, you know, some of it is guesswork, right? We have to be kind of guessing at what will it look like. And some of it is worst case scenario planning.
Right.
And a worst case scenario implies a judgment. And I don't intend it to be a judgment, because I don't know what necessarily the right thing is for this area. But worst case scenario being, how many, you know, if the most people possible move here, we need to have this much water available, right? So that's what I mean when I say worst case scenario planning, or we need to have enough, you know, roads that support this much traffic, or things of that nature.
Not
that it's a good or a bad thing, just that these are the, this is what we'll need to have to support that sort of development. Not that I think that sort of development should or should not happen.
Right.
But I mean, I think we realize that, you know, one way or another, the Gateway Tunnel project will move forward. It may not move forward, you know, this year. It may be 5 years. I hope not, because I think that would be bad for all of New Jersey.
Right.
But, you know, it will move forward, and that will bring more people to New Jersey, because it's going to open up lines of
transportation. Yes.
And that will bring more people. To us, I don't know how many more people, but, it may bring some more people. We know that we're going to see more development due to the fair share housing settlements.
Right.
You know, we know that's coming, whether, you know, regardless of your feelings about it, feelings aside, those developments are going to happen. So we need to plan for that. And we need to plan wisely. We need to think about, okay, so you know, take the emotion out of it. Take the, oh, should this be happening? Should this not be happening?
Right.
And say, well, this is happening. And so how can we make it the best outcome for everybody?
Right.
You know, possible.
Yes.
And how can we plan and benefit from it?
Right.
If it's going to happen. Right. And so, in my opinion, certainly in Clinton, is having a town center that's thriving, that people can shop in, people can spend their money in, people can find entertainment in, people can dine in, people can go to coffee shops in, those sorts of things. So, you know, when you're planning, when you're thinking about planning, which is really what zoning and land
yes.
use is about, that's sort of where I'm turning my focus. And certainly, as everyone who's ever heard me talk knows, I'm very focused on the economic sustainability of Hunterdon County in general, but certainly of Clinton.
Right.
And so I think, you know, using land use and zoning as a means to achieve positive sustainability results, both for the environment and for the economy, is, you know, is a great way to think about it.
Right.
And I think we're able to do that because we have those sorts of regulations in place.
Right. And it's a struggle, right? Because it is. It's personal feelings, especially in the community in which you live,
mm-hmm.
and not wanting to – the intent is never to harm.
No.
But at the same time, when we have our zoning based on municipal land use law, something that someone said to me when I first came on the planning board back in early 2004, I think, someone said, whatever your zoning is, think about, to your point, the worst thing that could be built on that piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
And is that what you want? So, you know, it's one of the reasons why we have height limits in town, you know, so that we don't have skyscrapers.
Right.
You know, and this is not a knock to Hoboken, so please don't take it that way. But, you know, Hoboken is 1.2 square miles, and they have 54,000 people.
Right.
Something around that number. Clinton is 1.3 square miles with 2,700 people.
Right.
We don't have the infrastructure, the roads, the water, the sewer,
no.
to be able to handle that kind of a population. And that's not what we're meant to be. So it's understanding not that – that we're not going to be Hoboken, but we're going to be Clinton.
Right. Of course. We also don't have the economy to sustain that kind of population.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes I forget, and I'll be perfectly honest about that, I forget that people aren't at that same place with me where I've already made that assumption.
Right.
Of, well, no, we're Hunterdon County. There's not... There aren't that many jobs here. We don't look at Manhattan every day.
Right.
Right? I mean, yes, do people commute to Manhattan from here? Absolutely. My husband does.
So does mine. that and, bus gets a lot of use from us.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I see it every day. But, you know, the vast majority of people are not commuting into the city every
right.
day. They're commuting to sort of the more immediate surrounding area. They're within Hunterdon County. So we're not looking at that kind of population boom. And so I think people sometimes, you know, have that sort of worst case scenario
yes.
fear. And I forget that because I've already had that and gone, oh, wait, that's not going to happen.
Right.
And so, you know, to allay people's fears, if anyone's listening and that is your fear, we're not Jersey City. We're not Hoboken. This is Hunterdon County.
Right.
Will we have a population increase? I sure hope so. Because I think that actually would be good for the economy here.
Well, we've had a decrease.
Exactly.
So the families that have moved out have not been replaced. The housing that you're going to start to see with
right.
the ability for more of a rental community.
Right.
Which, you know, and to that point, rental doesn't always equate to people who are not going to engage in your community.
I think it almost never equates to that, but yes.
But there's always that fear, right?
Sure.
You know, is it someone that's just going to come in for a short period of time? I think what you see is a lot of rentals are transition.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I'm just starting out. I'm not ready to buy a home yet.
Absolutely.
And then as you move forward, you get married, you have children potentially, and now you're looking for a home. You're going to stay in the same community in which you're at.
Absolutely. Unless you're priced out of it.
Unless
right?
you're priced out of it. Exactly.
And so that's how I wound up here. I was priced out of houses in Brooklyn. I didn't have the millions of dollars necessary to buy a home where I was. And also I wanted to live out here and there's a variety of reasons I moved out here. But I think, you know, this fear that if somebody is renting a home, they're somehow less engaged in the community in which they live,
right.
I think is really just a fear.
Yes.
And
it's a change to how the area has developed. We've always been majority owner-occupied
sure.
units, not rental. And it's interesting to see, you know, when they do the studies and how people are starting to engage, because they're looking for they want to be able to stay in the community maybe they grew up in.
Yep.
They want to, you know, start someplace where they're still close to home,
mm-hmm.
and this is an opportunity for them. And this, I think that's important.
Yeah. Well, and look at our development in town. We have the Halsted Place. We have
right.
I know several people who lived in town and didn't want
homes any longer.
They didn't want the maintenance or
right.
Whatever it was. They wanted to downsize, which I'm maintaining a very old home right now. Quite honestly, I'm regretting it a little bit. So I completely understand. And now they're renting, and they're fully engaged in the community.
Right.
There's no blip in their engagement. And so, you know, I don't think that that's an aberration. I think that that is it is a matter of how welcoming you can be to a community.
Right.
And so if you're a community that is willing to open your arms to another community that is entering,
right.
I think you will find engagement. I think if you are a community that shuns the rental community that comes into your neighborhoods, then you will find that it's not, you know, that it's reciprocated. So, you know, of course you're always going to have people who aren't engaged, but quite frankly, there's plenty of homeowners who are not engaged.
Right.
So, you know, I think the fear itself can be self-perpetuating.
Agreed. All right. So with that, we're going to do our first commercial break, and then we will be back to continue the conversation.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay. With that, we are now back to continue the conversation. You know, something else that kind of comes to mind, because I know that there's been, you know, the joy of social media is that you get to see what's going on all around you.
Yes.
The downfall of social media sometimes is that you get to see all the stuff that's going on around you. But there's a lot of talk about Route 78
mm-hmm.
and what's going to happen along the Route 78 corridor, because now you've got out in Easton, Allentown, Bethlehem, there's all of the warehousing
right.
that is being developed So, it's coming from New York, coming through New Jersey, getting out to Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton. But there's that look, they're looking for that kind of in between here in Hunterdon.
Right
on the 78 corridor. And I know that, this is an interesting conversation because you talk to some people who are like, I think that's great. It's, easy on off the highway. It's not necessarily right in with in a housing development. It's a low impact from cars.
Right.
Other than, potentially local employees. But then it is, smack dab in the middle of a farm field.
Yeah. And it's not, I'll be honest, I'm on the fence about how great I think this is for the community long term.
Right.
Because, the warehousing stuff comes and goes with the price of oil.
Right.
Because when oil is low, people ship via trucks. When oil is high, people ship via trains. And so, depending on what's happening with the economy overall, the warehousing industry is high and low. I don't know that it's a long-term sustainable model. And fortunately, Mark is not here to come in and yell at me for saying that.
So hopefully Mark's not listening to us right now.
I'm sure I would get in trouble. And I understand from an environmental perspective, one, it's not attractive.
Right.
Two, in the middle of a farm field, it's kind of like, it doesn't have that Hunterdon County feeling that people think of when they think of Hunterdon County. On the flip side of that is, we have communities without ratables looking for some sort of revenue stream.
Right.
And this is a viable option for a lot of communities.
So the ratables are, right now we all pay our property taxes, and municipalities are sustained by your property taxes. Obviously, in a lot of our communities out here, the burden is on residential because we don't have industry. The ratable comes in when a community can bring in something that is, one, not going to have an impact on the school system, potentially minimal impact on infrastructure, but will pay a much higher property tax because of square footage, because of product, or type of business that it's going to be.
Right.
And that's what, that's where towns struggle, I think, and especially the townships and the more rural. I mean, obviously in a town, we're not putting a warehouse on the middle of Old 22.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It's not going to happen. We don't have the property for it that they'd be looking for.
Right.
But to the towns and the townships that are struggling and are trying to find that are right off of the highway, this could be a viable option. But to your point, is it long-term sustainable? I mean, this is the part where we struggle, right?
It is. And if you look at, kind of when the office space buildings were a fad,
the boom.
Everybody was building office space, and now we have a lot of empty office space. And so that's the fear, right? Now we're going to build all this warehouse, and for 10 years it's going to be great, and then what do we do when it's not?
Right.
And so I think, it feels a little bit like a Band-Aid solution to a long-term problem that we have here in the county, which is how are we going to build a sustainable economy? What is the sustainable solution? And I don't have the answer, which is annoying, right?
Like, right.
I would love to be able to say,
this is what it is.
What we're going to do, and everybody's going to be, have lower taxes and great schools, and everything's going to be fine.
Right.
And I don't know what the solution is, and I think we're all trying to work together to figure that out. And this is one avenue that people are pursuing, and I think it should be pursued to the end,
right,
to see if it makes sense. And each community has to decide for itself, is this the right thing for us at this moment, and will it work long term? The other thing I would love to understand more, and I'll be perfectly honest, I don't know the details, is does this create jobs? For me, if you're bringing in a business and it doesn't create high wage jobs,
livable wages, right?
I'm not as excited about it,
right?
Because we don't have a huge booming industry here in the county. And so we do have tech industry coming in with Unicom coming in. That's amazing and wonderful. And I think we have Exxon, which is great. I know we have Exxon, I should say.
Yes.
Which is wonderful. and so those sorts of businesses, I think, are fabulous for the county. I think businesses that don't create high income jobs, high wage right. earning jobs, are not as great for the county. I think pursuing industry that does create those sorts of jobs is what is going to bring bring you know economic sustainability long term.
Right, and keep people living here.
Yeah,
so that they don't have to. You know, the commute doesn't become 3 hours one way.
Well, what you don't want to do is create jobs that don't pay enough for people who can live here.
Right.
Right. Like, if you're going to have such a high tax burden, which we all have one, you know, we all live here.
Right.
We have a ridiculously high tax burden. You need to have jobs that pay enough that people can live in the community they're working in my opinion.
Right.
And so I don't know the answer if warehousing jobs pay that much. I don't know. Perfectly honest.
Right.
And if somebody wants to hop on our Facebook live feed and tell me yes they do, then I'll back off that issue immediately because I'll be honest.
Some of it would depend too on what type. So you're going to have just a distribution center,
right?
You know, that doesn't necessarily bring in a lot of jobs.
Right.
But is there going to be some sort of manufacturing? In which case, you know, some manufacturing jobs, because of the technical
Absolutely.
Skill required, will be a much higher paying. So
yeah.
It really is. I mean, it's such a, you know, we talk about these things, and it's actually kind of nice to be able to talk about it on the radio and have everyone else hear it. I mean, Riley and I are wonks when it comes to this stuff. So if you're bored, I apologize. But, you know, these are the questions that we ask ourselves every day as we have – you know, someone that, you know, business that comes to us and says, you know, listen, we're looking at this particular piece of property. You know, I try to be proactive. I know Riley's proactive as well. Is that, you know, if someone reaches out, we're trying to have conversations with them to understand what they're looking for. Because, you know, to her point, it's about sustainability. It's about making sure what we have complements what or what's coming complements what we already have.
Yeah.
We don't want to lose what is really the heart and soul of our community, which is our downtown. You know, people come to Clinton to experience that.
Yes.
Those yep. businesses that are there. So how do we continue to bring businesses that will now benefit them? Craft brew, if anyone's got an interest. A distillery.
Anyone out there interested?
Yes, we're asking.
Call us.
But those are the kinds of things, you know, that is... Those are draws, and that also brings younger families to our communities.
Yeah.
You know, we lose a lot of our college graduates, you know, people who grew up here, because, one, they can't afford to live, or they'd have to commute to get a job
right.
in their field. So it is. It's a struggle, and I know, you know, we deal with it. I know other towns are dealing with it. You know, we're located right now in Flemington at the Chamber Radio, and we know that Flemington is dealing with it with their Main Street.
Yep.
You know, how do we do this where not everyone is happy, but it really is an overall benefit to the community?
Yeah. I mean, how do we, you know, as you I like that you've switched to the word charm. That makes me happy.
Yes.
because it is a charming community, and it has so much to offer. And so how do we take... a charming 20th century community and turn it into a charming 21st century community
right.
that has enough to offer that, you know, our young next generation of up-and-coming entrepreneurs wants to build the future in our community
right.
and not in Jersey City, right? And so I think there are a multitude of ways to do that, and what I would love to see us have come into, you know, if I had my way, we'd have a small business incubator, we'd have another arts community, you know, the Art Yard in Frenchtown is doing a really cool, amazing thing.
Right.
They were just in the New York Times. They're doing some really, really cool stuff in Frenchtown. And I would encourage anyone to check them out because they're a great organization. And, you know, it's, like I said, small business incubators, arts organizations, obviously the 100 Art Museum and the Red Mill. I can't help but shout out for our Clinton.
Absolutely.
Clinton cultural organizations are doing wonderful things in town. But, you know, community events, community outreach, business organizations, the Chamber, the Economic Development Division, all of those organizations are doing great work. It's a slow, long game. And people don't like that. I don't like that. I'm a very impatient person, as you know. I want it now, now, now.
Welcome to Jersey government.
Yeah. But if we all can hang in there and keep working,
right?
You know, and keep moving and keep understanding that, you know, with the right leadership in place and with people who are forward thinking and willing to collaborate and willing to work together,
right,
we will make positive progress towards sustainability for the long term.
Right. And yes, you're going to see an increase in housing.
Yeah.
And you're going to see that everywhere. I mean, that, yes, and that's where state kind of trumps local.
Absolutely.
You know, we've had this conversation. So just to kind of pull it back to that, you know, it's coming. What we've done in Clinton, I know what other communities have done from the mayors that I've spoken with and the council people I've spoken with, is work hard to ensure that it is smart, yeah, and it's done in a right way that is not going to put a burden on our infrastructure. And, you know, to a person who asked the question, you know, do we have the water, do we have the sewer? Yes, we have planned appropriately for the development that's coming. Will you ever see someone use that as an excuse that, you know, from a political perspective? I am sure you will.
Absolutely.
You know, this is where politics that now comes into play, because if you can take out someone anywhere, both sides of the aisle, regardless, because of, you know, you don't like how they're moving the town forward or your community forward, that's always going to come into play. But, you know, speaking from Clinton, we've worked hard to create a rolling 5-year infrastructure plan. So nothing we do is static.
Right.
Everything is rolling, because each year things change and we need to be able to adapt to whatever those changes are. Our two redevelopment areas, perfect example. You know, there's an interest in the AMP that there's, and it's part of our overall fair share housing plan.
Right.
So we needed to move some of our infrastructure work around to be able to accommodate that. And because we keep it as a rolling and a fluid document,
right,
we can. But we also know what needs to be done, and we've got a plan in place to, from the static perspective, to do, you know, a mile of pipe every year.
Right, because we also spent a significant amount of time understanding every single aspect of the system.
Right.
And so the water system, the sewer system, all systems in the community have had full audits. We understand from every angle what's there. You know, of course, you know, these are ancient systems, so anything could happen,
right,
at any given moment.
Which is
moment.
Why we have the let's change
that,
pipe, right, out every year.
But a large portion of time was spent getting to understand each system so that a plan could be put in place.
Right.
And so certainly when I came on board, that was made very clear to me, that, you know, these systems have been meticulously understood, made to be understood. They've been planned for. Each system has experts involved with it. And so the goal, as the mayor just said, is that every year there is a replacement process. And that is to ensure that over time we are maintaining and managing the system in an intelligent way.
Right.
And so it's not, you know, it's not as if we're sitting back and watching it fall apart. Like, oh, I guess it'll
work.
No,
no, we're definitely
right?
not doing that. Right.
No, that is never happening. And as you said, the great thing about it, and I think any community out there who has a system like this,
right,
hopefully is planning in this way, is that it is a fluid plan so that as things come up, we can adjust as we need.
Right.
Because that is just smart planning. And so from the perspective of somebody who's done planning in the past, when you're planning major, major projects and major developments, you have to be able to adjust as you go along. Because you just never know what you're going to come up against, and
right,
even if you've done any sort of small home repair, even in a new house, you know, you open a ceiling, God knows what's under there.
Oh, boy, do I know. Been there, done that recently.
So, yeah.
You're going to be going through that soon.
Exactly. So, you know, we plan for that. We have contingencies. We have contingencies for our contingencies.
Right.
So we're aware of how all of this works, and we're planning accordingly.
Right. And it's, to your point, it's smart planning. You know, I get, and, you know, I've had debates with residents and with other elected officials elsewhere that if it's not broken, don't fix it. You know, keep the rates down, keep the taxes flat. That is not short term. It's a boon because you get to benefit, but long term, you're going to pay for it.
Absolutely.
Water mains break in the middle of the night on holidays, the coldest day of the year, or the hottest day of the year.
Yeah.
That's what happens, and it costs us more to do those repairs than if we were to continuously maintain and plan for it appropriately.
Absolutely. The only person a flat tax benefits is the person who's telling you they're giving you a flat tax.
Right.
Because they can tell you they've given you a flat tax. You will pay for it eventually. It may be 5 years later, but you'll pay for it.
Yes.
Because eventually you have to pay for the cost that you didn't pay for, right?
All along, right.
Because things break, things need to be repaired, there's inflation at the very minimum, right?
Right.
And when you're talking about systems and infrastructure, we all know that roads need to be repaired, pipes need to be replaced, windows need to be fixed, walls need to be painted. Anyone who, you know, if we're talking about home ownership, anyone who owns a home knows that things need to be fixed or replaced. Your boiler explodes.
Right.
You know,
the air conditioner goes.
It's not sexy work. This is not, you know.
Right. And jury rigging it for a short period of time. Again, long term, you wind up paying
more because
now you've paid for the jury rig. And now next year when it breaks completely, you're paying to have it replaced. So now you just kind of add an additional cost versus doing it right the first time, which is all, you know, we try to do.
Exactly.
In all of our planning. And, you know, same thing with zoning and ordinances. You know, we have these conversations, and our goal is not to make residents' lives more difficult by legislating everything.
No.
It's actually to try and make it easier and put parameters around, you know, anything that's going on in town. I'll use garbage as an example because this morning the garbage trucks were in town again before 7 a.m., and I went over very nicely, even to the chief of police consternation, and reminded them that, you know, 7 a.m. is our zoning ordinance, our noise ordinance. You cannot be picking up trash in a residential community before 7 a.m.
Right.
You're picking up a commercial garbage, but as you're beeping, you're right next to a resident who is going to call us and complain because they've been woken up at 6:30 in the morning. And the guys were very nice about it and said, okay, we will make sure. You know, and the chief's head exploded, but I told them I was very nice, and they were very nice, and quite, and I didn't chase them this time, so I guess that was a good thing.
Progress.
But, you know, that's the intent of a lot of what we do. You know, some of the ordinances won't have a direct impact on a resident.
Right.
Some of them are done because the state changes, and we need to modify what we do.
Right.
You know, all of these things kind of come into play. And, you know, does it get difficult? Yeah. And does it seem like we're over-legislating? Probably sometimes.
It does sometimes. But it's also, if you think about it, like when you're dealing with your kids, like sometimes you just have to set rules.
Right.
And sometimes you set a rule and you would love to be like, you know what, just watch the show.
Right.
But if you say just watch the show, then the next night, they're going to watch the show again.
Yes.
And you need them to follow the rule. And so the rule is the rule is the rule. And fine, yes, there are times when it feels like it would be easier to just go, you know what, just come through at 6:30.
Right.
You know, and beep your beeping, and at least you're actually picking up the garbage for a change.
They picked up on Friday. It was all good. No disasters on Friday, thankfully.
But, you know, the point being, you know, sometimes we have to just accept that a rule exists and we follow it.
Right.
And pick our battles.
Yes.
And then there are bad rules, and we acknowledge that. I think, you know, sometimes from the state we get rules and we go, well, this is
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense. Right. For town.
And they're usually unfunded mandates
that
we're having to deal with, so that the cost comes back to us.
Exactly. And we acknowledge that, and we'll let you know all about it and ask you to call the state and tell them all about it.
So we'll give you some phone numbers, some emails, whatever it takes.
You know.
Right. All right. With that, we do have to go to our next commercial break, and then we'll be back for the last 15 minutes of our show.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right. And we have a special guest here with us. Lily is joining us today. So she's getting to enjoy and learn all about local government, as if she hasn't heard enough of it at home, right?
Yes, she hears about it all the time.
So with that, we have about a little less than 15 minutes left. You know, again, I'll make the pitch. This station, this channel, this program is all about you, what you want to know about your communities. If there is someone that you think you want to hear from, we will have Clinton Public's board president and superintendent one Monday. I think they're on summer break, so yep. Trying to get them in. We're also going to ask our county clerk and a local municipal clerk to join us, yep. Probably a finance officer at one point in time. You know, maybe we'll even bring in a zoning officer to talk about, you know, what the process is for someone that's interested. But, you know, that's what this program's about. Whatever you want to know, whoever you want to hear from, if we can get them on, we'll get them on with us, even if we got to get them on the phone.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just to kind of go back to zoning real quick, talking about, you know, how residents go about finding out what's going on, same way with our council meetings, all of that information is public. You can request copies of plans. Usually they cost, because it costs us to have them produced. But being able to go in and take a look at whatever's going on, as soon as they're available to the board, they're available to residents to come into the office to take a look at. I'm sure most other towns work the same way with that, too.
Well, and people can attend the meeting as well. So, and then there's typically a public comment period.
There's always a public comment period.
and you can speak. And
right. And if you're talking about an application, then there's also, you know, once the testimony is completed, then you can have comments from residents, you know, anyone who is, who feels that they're impacted by it.
So if there's a project in your community that you have some concerns about, you know, or that you're happy about or whatever it is, you can go to the meeting that is specific to that project and voice those concerns.
Right. The one thing to keep in mind, and I think this is where a lot of people struggle, is you can't deny a project just because you don't like it.
Right.
The way the ordinances and the zoning is established, if they fall within the guidelines, and this is kind of talking about your worst case scenario, you know, if you don't want a drive-through restaurant in a specific spot, but it is currently zoned and allowed for, then there's no, the only way you can say no to a project like that is if either legally or from a planning or engineering perspective, it will have a negative impact. And those need to be justified by your experts. That, now, that being said, the applicant can then appeal and sue the town for, you know, spot zoning or for going against current zoning laws. So you have to keep a lot of that in mind. I get that there are times, and I'll use Halsted Place as an example. So that project was initially an office building that went to the zoning board for, oh my God, I can't remember how many years ago. Long time. Next to the library. They finally got their permission for the office building. Everything went through. They turned around and filed a variance to make it housing. Because they'd already had approval for an existing structure, they were able to make the case that offices, you know, it's not viable, economically viable for us to build an office building here. No one is going to rent. We think we can do apartments. And there was a lot of pushback from residents concerned about, you know, what they were going to look like. You know, was it going to be an overwhelming? Was it going to be in keeping with the town? And there were zoning board members who were yelled at by other residents because they agreed to it. But again, similar to the planning board, and if it's all within the existing zoning, if they can justify why they need the variance, you have to have a really good case to deny it.
Right.
And that is the struggle for all of us, right? So we try when we're doing our zoning and we're looking at how an area is zoned or property is zoned that we understand what could go there. But then when the variance comes, you don't know how that's going to go. And if they make the case, again, unless you can legitimately state why you don't want it there, the board is obligated to approve those variances.
And that goes back to, as I said at the beginning, the initial, most fundamental tenant property law, which is property must go to its best, most efficient use. And so property law favors that tenant. It does not favor property sitting, doing nothing.
Right.
And that's just a fundamental tenant of property. And so it may not feel good and people may not like it, but it is kind of buried, entrenched, and fundamental to property law in general. And so that's across the United States,
right.
I believe. I don't, certain states are a little bit different, like California, because of the way they structure their laws.
Right.
But, you know, any common law country has that fundamental belief that property law must, you know, property must be used for its most efficient, best use.
Right.
And it, you know, it flows to that.
Yes.
So, you know, it doesn't always feel good because you're like, well, I don't really want a McDonald's in my backyard. But, you know, if that's the most, you know, according to whoever's seeking the variance, if that is the most efficient, best use, and you really can't prove one way or the other,
a detriment,
not,
right,
that the detriment exists.
And it's private property.
Right.
It's not, you know, that's the other piece of it. If a town does not own the property, then as a private property owner, they're entitled to request relief to make it a usable piece of property.
Well, right.
that is, you know, financially, again, financially viable for them.
Right. Well, and that's the thing that people forget sometimes too. And I get it. It's hard to remember because it does become emotional because it's where you live. And,
right.
And that, you know, that's not unreasonable. But it's also not unreasonable to want to use your own property. And so, you know, if you own a piece of property and you bought it and you want to use it, and somebody is trying to keep you from using it, there's an emotionality to that as well. And so it can, I think, become pretty explosive, as we've seen. So,
yes.
Maintaining sort of an objectivity to all of that becomes challenging, and it's something that we all strive to do, but...
It's hard. It's not easy. I mean, when you've looked at rolling hills and farmland for 30 years,
yes.
and now all of a sudden you may be looking at townhouses, it's not,
yes.
you know, that's not something that is palatable to a lot of people.
Yeah, and especially if you've, you know, if you've done your legwork, if you bought your house and you checked all the zoning for all the surrounding properties and
right.
it said one thing and you thought, oh, well, that's what it's going to be, and it didn't occur to you that there's such a thing as variances, or
right.
you know what? Because it is complicated, as we said at the outset. This is complicated. It's a simple principle at the top, but then all these layers come in that complicate
right.
things that people may or may not understand or know about, or even you know you got to think. When I know buying my first house became emotional, even though. I have done property law. I am trained in property law. I have done very large deals. And it's still, buying my own house became an emotional thing. And I made choices that now, looking back, I'm like, oh, why did I settle on that?
Right.
You know, so I get, you know, it can be complicated.
Right.
So, you know, I am sympathetic to all the relevant parties to all these situations.
Right. And I think it's important, and I get everyone is busy, your time is valuable, but you know, getting on distribution lists from your town.
Yes.
You know, we have, every time there's a meeting, if you want, you can get on our distribution, that our agenda gets emailed to you, that the land use board agenda can get emailed to you. That's the kind of stuff where you can at least watch that way. I mean,
yeah.
we try to put it out on social media, and I get not everyone's on social media. We also try to put out emails, but if we don't have the email, then we don't necessarily know.
Yep.
There's a lot of rumors that get that start flying. You know, last week was a perfect example about the A&P property and,
right.
and what was going on there. All of these things, you know, we can't address them unless we're asked to address them.
Right.
And that's what we're here for. I mean, we work for all of you, as do the elected officials in every other town.
Absolutely.
Work for the residents of that community. You have questions. You have concerns. My phone's on 24/7. I'm sure Riley's phone is on 24/7.
It goes on do not disturb at a certain point.
Okay.
I always answer after. I do wake up at 5 a.m. though, so.
Okay, there you go. Well, anyway, thanks for listening today. We will be back again next week.
Yep.
And again, reach out to us if you have topics that you want us to talk
Please
about, people you
know.
Want us to interview. If you want to come on and talk about something, you know what? This is your table. So come join us. Hope you all have a great day.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
A second suspect still being sought for yesterday's mass shooting at a popular food festival in Northern California that leaves three people dead. The shooter killed by police makes four, and at least 15 people were wounded.
We were standing there, we're in the restroom, we walk out, I literally turn like this, and he's standing right there with this rifle. He's getting ready to put the bullets in it, and he just starts shooting. He's walking towards the tent where we were working.
Among those killed, a six-year-old boy. Police say the second suspect in some way helped the gunman. The president just condemned the horrific mass shooting, in his words. The president in the Rose Garden for a bill signing ceremony for the 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund bill. He's flanked by police and fire officers who responded to the 9/11 terrorist attacks in Lower Manhattan on 9/11. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
At Walgreens, we know that your day doesn't stop for diabetes. So when you've got places to go and people to see, count on Walgreens every day to get expert diabetes advice 24/7. Find all major brands of testing supplies like Walgreens True Metrics in-store and online. And download tools to help you stay on track, like our 5-star mobile app with Pill Reminder. At Walgreens, we are your diabetes go-to. Stop by and talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, trusted since 1901.
Here's a great deal on MyPillow. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, type in promo code USA, you'll get two MyPillow premium pillows for $69.98. Now, that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere at retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all MyPillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA.
A tropical storm moving towards Hawaii is forecast to become Hurricane Eric late today. It's too early to know whether it will directly threaten the islands. Dan Coats will be leaving his position as Director of National Intelligence in a few weeks, and President Trump says he's nominating Republican Texas Congressman John Ratcliffe to succeed Coats as DNI. Ratcliffe had a testy series of exchanges with the former special counsel Robert Mueller at a hearing last week.
Respectfully, Director, it was not the special counsel's job to conclusively determine Donald Trump's innocence or to exonerate him, because the bedrock principle of our justice system is a presumption of innocence. It exists for everyone. Everyone is entitled to it, including sitting presidents.
Top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer says it's a big mistake for the president to let such a partisan player as Ratcliffe into a role requiring nonpartisanship. And this is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Montana authorities say the body of a 2-year-old boy found over the weekend is that of the child of a couple who died in a murder-suicide. The bodies of Hannah Janiak and Daniel Salcido of Medford, Oregon, were found after a police chase on July 25th. Police say Salcido had killed Janiak with a single gunshot, and then he turned the gun on himself. The toddler's body was found in the West Fisher Creek area. The couple went missing on July 11th, the same day Janiak was to have begun a jail term for burglary. U.S. and Chinese trade negotiators are resuming talks this week in an effort to end a year-long trade war. Trump administration negotiators flying into Shanghai today for the first face-to-face talks since the two nations declared a truce at last month's G20 summit. Many analysts don't expect a lot of progress from these two-day talks. Government officials and business leaders are hoping the two sides can at least agree on so-called goodwill gestures and lay some groundwork for future negotiations. And The Lion King is still at the top of the box office, the remake of the 1994 Disney movie finishing in the top spot for the second straight week, earning another $75.5 million. Coming in second, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Quentin Tarantino movie, which sold just over $40 million bucks of tickets. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.